Hello. This is your Year 9 listening test in English 2013. It will consist of two tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. Tastes differ. You will hear five people talking about the film The Bourne Supremacy they have just seen. You have 1 minute now to read the task. Listen to the text now and start doing the task. Speaker 1.
I loved The Bourne Supremacy from beginning to end. It was such an exciting film, full of car chases, fights, explosions, and all the other things you'd expect from a good action film. I'd seen the first Bourne film, The Bourne Identity, and I was a bit nervous that this one wouldn't be as good. I needn't have worried, because this film is not only as good as the first one, it's better.
Speaker 2.
The Bourne Supremacy is a well-made thriller that reminds me a bit of the films they used to make back in the 1970s, when a good plot was more important than special effects. That's not to say there's no action in this film. There's plenty of action to keep you from falling asleep. But there's also a good story, which is so difficult to find in today's thrillers.
Speaker 3.
Sometimes, when I go to the cinema, I really wish I'd stayed at home instead. The Bourne Supremacy is one of those films that made me feel that way. I usually like a good thriller, but this one was so confusing that I really didn't understand what was happening at all. Actually, I must confess that I fell asleep halfway through it, which probably didn't help.
Speaker 4.
I saw The Bourne Identity a few years ago, and I loved it. I thought Matt Damon was fantastic in the lead role, and I thought the whole film was intelligently made. So I was really looking forward to going to see The Bourne Supremacy this weekend. Well, what a disappointment. Everything that was so good about the first film was missing. All that was left were some special effects and a silly story.
Speaker 5.
I quite enjoyed The Bourne Supremacy. I mean, it was a good way to pass 2 hours, but it's not the kind of film I'll remember a month from now, and I don't feel like rushing out and watching it again. I think the best thing about it is the actors. Matt Damon in particular. I think he is really convincing in his role.
You will have 1 minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time. Speaker 1.
I loved The Bourne Supremacy from beginning to end. It was such an exciting film, full of car chases, fights, explosions, and all the other things you'd expect from a good action film. I'd seen the first Bourne film, The Bourne Identity, and I was a bit nervous that this one wouldn't be as good. I needn't have worried, because this film is not only as good as the first one, it's better.
Speaker 2.
The Bourne Supremacy is a well-made thriller that reminds me a bit of the films they used to make back in the 1970s, when a good plot was more important than special effects. That's not to say there's no action in this film. There's plenty of action to keep you from falling asleep. But there's also a good story, which is so difficult to find in today's thrillers.
Speaker 3.
Sometimes, when I go to the cinema, I really wish I'd stayed at home instead. The Bourne Supremacy is one of those films that made me feel that way. I usually like a good thriller, but this one was so confusing that I really didn't understand what was happening at all. Actually, I must confess that I fell asleep halfway through it, which probably didn't help.
Speaker 4.
I saw The Bourne Identity a few years ago, and I loved it. I thought Matt Damon was fantastic in the lead role, and I thought the whole film was intelligently made. So I was really looking forward to going to see The Bourne Supremacy this weekend. Well, what a disappointment. Everything that was so good about the first film was missing. All that was left were some special effects and a silly story.
Speaker 5.
I quite enjoyed The Bourne Supremacy. I mean, it was a good way to pass 2 hours, but it's not the kind of film I'll remember a month from now, and I don't feel like rushing out and watching it again. I think the best thing about it is the actors. Matt Damon in particular. I think he is really convincing in his role.
There is 1 minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 1. Go on to task 2. Task 2, secret codes. Listen to a radio program and read the statements. You have 1 minute now to read the task. Then you will hear a signal. Now listen to the text and do the task.
Hello and welcome to the programme. With us today in the studio is Joe Allen, who's a professor of mathematics, and Sally Evans, who actually worked for the British Secret Service for over 20 years. They're both here with me to discuss the importance of secret codes throughout history.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Sally, now I understand that a code invented during the reign of Roman Emperor Julius Caesar was used for hundreds of years after his death.
Yes, amazingly it was. It was quite a simple code, really. All the letters of the alphabet simply moved three places. So, A became D, B became E, etc.
How is it possible that the code remained unbroken for all that time?
Well, we often forget that back in those days, not many ordinary people knew how to read. So that's probably one of the main reasons why it lasted so long.
When did people start working out how to break codes?
Well, one of the earliest people to ever break coded messages was an Arab mathematician called Al-Kindi, who lived in the 9th century. He was an extremely intelligent man, and he wrote 290 books on medicine, linguistics, astronomy, and mathematics. He even wrote one or two on music. At the time, he was known as the philosopher of the Arabs, and in fact, his book on deciphering codes was only rediscovered relatively recently in Istanbul in 1987.
Yes, and actually it was because he knew a lot about maths and languages that he was able to understand how a code could be broken. He did it by working out how frequently each letter was used in a language.
Can you explain that in a little more detail?
Yes, for example, let's take the English language. If you take any general text in English, you'll find that the letter E is the most frequent. And when you've worked out how often each letter appears, then you have a way of breaking the code.
Ah, I see. So you look for the most common letter and you assume that letter represents the letter E.
That's right. And letters in the code that have a very low frequency will probably represent Q and Z because they only occur very rarely in English.
That's very interesting. But do all codes use letters of the alphabet?
No. Some use symbols, which just means that you look for the most frequent symbol instead of the most frequent letter. In fact, the author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books, used stick men as a code in his book The Adventure of the Dancing Men. In that story, Sherlock Holmes manages to break the code when he realizes that the dancing men represent letters of the alphabet.
So, it seems that Conan Doyle knew about Al-Kindi's way of deciphering codes.
Definitely.
You will have 1 minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Hello and welcome to the programme. With us today in the studio is Joe Allen, who's a professor of mathematics, and Sally Evans, who actually worked for the British Secret Service for over 20 years. They're both here with me to discuss the importance of secret codes throughout history.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Sally, now I understand that a code invented during the reign of Roman Emperor Julius Caesar was used for hundreds of years after his death.
Yes, amazingly it was. It was quite a simple code, really. All the letters of the alphabet simply moved three places. So, A became D, B became E, etc.
How is it possible that the code remained unbroken for all that time?
Well, we often forget that back in those days, not many ordinary people knew how to read. So that's probably one of the main reasons why it lasted so long.
When did people start working out how to break codes?
Well, one of the earliest people to ever break coded messages was an Arab mathematician called Al-Kindi, who lived in the 9th century. He was an extremely intelligent man, and he wrote 290 books on medicine, linguistics, astronomy, and mathematics. He even wrote one or two on music. At the time, he was known as the philosopher of the Arabs, and in fact, his book on deciphering codes was only rediscovered relatively recently in Istanbul in 1987.
Yes, and actually it was because he knew a lot about maths and languages that he was able to understand how a code could be broken. He did it by working out how frequently each letter was used in a language.
Can you explain that in a little more detail?
Yes, for example, let's take the English language. If you take any general text in English, you'll find that the letter E is the most frequent. And when you've worked out how often each letter appears, then you have a way of breaking the code.
Ah, I see. So you look for the most common letter and you assume that letter represents the letter E.
That's right. And letters in the code that have a very low frequency will probably represent Q and Z because they only occur very rarely in English.
Hmm, that's very interesting. But do all codes use letters of the alphabet?
No. Some use symbols, which just means that you look for the most frequent symbol instead of the most frequent letter. In fact, the author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books, used stick men as a code in his book The Adventure of the Dancing Men. In that story, Sherlock Holmes manages to break the code when he realizes that the dancing men represent letters of the alphabet.
So, it seems that Conan Doyle knew about Al-Kindi's way of deciphering codes.
Definitely.
There is 1 minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 2 and the listening part of your test. Hand in your paper, please.